This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Rajit Gad, who is the director of the Wireless Internet for Mobile Enterprise Consortium, or WinMEC, at UCLA. He's also a professor at the Henry Samueli School of Engineering and Applied Science at UCLA. Welcome to Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thanks, Mark.
We're mainly going to talk about the RFID Executive Forum that's going to be taking place at UCLA in just a short time. But why don't we talk a little bit before we do that about RFID in general and where it is right now. How did you first get involved in RFID studies, and why is it something of interest to you?
There's sort of two separate aspects to it. One is many years ago when I was doing some work for the automotive industry, I would sort of talk to the people, and one of the things I sort of would hear would be constant complaints about not being able to track the parts, whether it's within the factory or through the supply chain.
Right.
And also, not being able to sometimes find stuff, and stuff gets misplaced, not being able to find it and locate it accurately. And then, of course, so my thought was that, perhaps one day there'll be a way to sort of track these things wirelessly. And, at that time, I'm talking early 90s, wireless technology was still in its infancy, and it was very expensive.
Right. And in fact, the classic problem here is finding the remote for a TV, isn't it?
Well, that is one example of a very simple residential application. I think that certainly is a very interesting application. And then, but what happened is, I started this wireless center here in UCLA, and my interest was, wireless technologies that go into the enterprise.
Right.
And so I guess RFID is a very natural fit.
Okay. Define the RFID field and what exactly radio frequency ID is.
Radio frequency identification, or RFID, allows an object to be uniquely identified with a number. And in addition, and you can store that number within a chip. In addition, so for example, if you think about barcodes, you could essentially think of this as a digital barcode. And so you can do some interesting things with it that you cannot do with barcode. For example, you can read it without having line of sight access to the chip.
Right.
And you can read it through different, temperatures and humidity conditions and so on.
And you can read it at a distance.
You can read it at a distance. Even if it's occluded, you can often read it depending on what the environment is like. And in addition to having the ID that uniquely identifies that object or artifact or person, you can store additional information because, after all, it is a chip.
Right.
And you can store all sorts of very interesting information about the product, about the status, where it is, what it's meant for, and all sorts of other whatever information that you need in your particular application.
Okay, we're going to talk about some specifics coming up here, but on your website there's the term Internet of Artifacts, and essentially that there's a philosophy behind all of these specific activities. What is the Internet of Artifacts, and how does that relate to RFID?
Yeah, my idea of the Internet of Artifacts is, if you look at Internet, the way it was set up originally, it was set up to connect computing devices.
Right.
So the way Internet evolved was that first people had individual computers, and then they used computers for whatever application, and then it dawned on users that, if I could connect with this person live, then I could exchange information and so on, and with email being the first killer app of the Internet.
Right.
And I look at, so that is sort of the Internet, the way it was set up, and my idea was that if you look at every object, an object is essentially, if you embed a very tiny, tiny chip into the object, it now becomes a node on the Internet.
Right. So, in fact, the starting point of the Internet was connecting machines,
yes.
And the next step was essentially connecting people through their contact with the machines.
Yes.
And the third step is essentially to put a computing machine, but a very small one, on all objects,
yes,
and thereby connect them and therefore essentially everything.
Yes, and so I'll give you an example. I suppose I want to just look at something that I own, okay?
Right.
And I may go to, I may pull up my PDA or my cell phone and I type the ID of that entity,
right,
or some other descriptor, and I would like to get information about that entity. And, you know, of course, there'll be certain things I would want to find out about and certain things I wouldn't care.
Right.
So the first step about the first step in the Internet of Artifacts, my vision, is just getting, tracking where the stuff is. Just, you know, because if there's an ID for any object, then the as long as the object is within an environment that can be read,
right,
that can read the object, then you would have a situation whereby the environment knows the existence of the object, and so you can locate the object. And as the object is moving, as long as there is enough readers in the environment that they can even track not only the location but the moving of the object.
Right.
So that is the first aspect of the Internet of Artifacts. The next aspect is not only knowing, you know, where the object is, but what is the condition of the object.
Right.
The status.
How much gas it's got in it, how old it is, whether it's receiving money, any number of things.
Yeah, any type of, and so that, to me, that is the sort of the second phase of the Internet of Artifacts, and, you know, I've given sort of this lecture several times.
Right.
And I'm going to keep giving this lecture.
Right.
Where I talk about the different phases, and to me, sort of, you know, the first phase is sort of locating.
Right.
So the second phase, for example, within the second phase, you can also store additional information about the object. So if the object, has sensed a certain temperature, let's look at, you know, people are talking about using RFID, for example, for tracking of meat.
Right.
And if the meat has sensed that the temperature has gone above a certain threshold value,
right,
then it stores that that exception within the chip.
Right.
And now somebody who's reading the package of meat, the chip in the package, can say, "Oh, looks like the temperature exceeded such and such, such and such number over a period of time, and therefore, by our analysis, this meat should not be eaten anymore."
Right.
Right. That's just a simple example.
Okay.
So that takes you to the second stage of the Internet of Artifacts, which is, I think, going to be much more complicated in the first stage.
All right. That's some valuable philosophical background to consider. Let's talk specifically about this RFID executive forum that's coming up. When, where, what, and so on about that forum?
It's in UCLA in the Sunset Village.
Right.
And it's on March 9th, which is a Wednesday, 2005.
Right.
And the idea of this particular forum is to bring thought leaders and practitioners from industry, from research labs, from academia, to discuss and exchange information of where they are with respect to the reality on the ground. The Internet of Artifacts is my vision for the future.
Right.
But if you look at where things are today, you know, we've had the Walmart mandate, we've had the Department of Defense mandate, and now the mandates are kicking in, and so the suppliers are putting RFID tags, on the pallets and the cartons, at the pallet and the carton level. And then there have been a lot of pilot studies. People have, including my own research lab in UCLA, we've done different studies. And there have been very interesting findings, and some good, some bad.
Okay.
Some successes, some failures. So we want to come together, learn from each other, you know, where the successes were, where the failures were, you know, why things failed. You know, are there fundamental issues? Are there fundamental research issues? Are there business issues? Are there issues relating to, for example, you inserted a technology into an existing business process without altering the business process, and maybe there was no ROI, and therefore does it mean that you need to now modify the business process? My personal take is anytime a new technology, fundamentally new technology, gets inserted into business process, into a business process, the existing business process just cannot continue to exist the way it is.
In fact, there's a term of art, disruptive technology. Would you characterize RFID as a disruptive technology?
Oh, very much so.
Okay, and therefore, what's the important thing for academics and for business people to know about it, and what's the important part of the interaction between the academic and the commercial areas for RFID?
Right. So at this forum, the business people will share with us, where things went right and where things went wrong.
Right.
I'll give you a very simple example. There's a very specific type of a reader and tag where they are finding that the reliability of reading of tags in moving objects is not what they were expecting it to be.
Right.
Right. So
it's not as good as you expected it to be.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right.
And they basically, so those reports of this nature, and other reports they will bring to us. And in academia, I look at, for example, my role to dig deeper into the technology, to do research, to see what is not working, why it's not working, are there fundamental physics limitations that have been reached.
Right.
In certain situations, I'm expecting that we will find that, and really that means you need a fundamentally new, let's say, radio frequency protocol or new hardware and so on. And at other places, perhaps it is not at the hardware level, but at the middleware level that you could make changes to and solve some of the problems.
Explain what middleware is.
So what happens is that if you look at the hardware, the RFID hardware that consists of a reader and a tag.
Right.
And, the reader tracks the tags as they move and so on and so forth. If someone were to utilize, and readers and tags operate at different frequencies, in different protocols, in different standards, via different standards.
Right.
And so forth. And pretty much every reader and so on, is different, and tag is different. So when someone tries to build an application using different readers and tags within an enterprise, then you get into all sorts of difficulty because each reader is talking a different language and so on and so forth. So a middleware, for example, the middleware research that we've been developing this middleware called the WinRFID, and we'll be doing research on it for hopefully a long time. What essentially it does is it abstracts out the data such that the application developer does not need to worry about the fact that that this reader is talking this language, and there's a unified language we have created that the application developer can talk to any reader with that same language.
Okay, so essentially it serves an interpretive function and lets the operator operate at a level of generality and let the middleware sort of implement it.
Well, yeah. So one of the jobs is the interpretive function. Another job is the networking function.
Right.
A third job is data management and data moving. So suppose a tag comes in and it has to go to a certain destination.
Right.
Within the network. So it will essentially send the data to the correct location. A fourth function is messaging. For example, if you are expecting a very important shipment and there's certain rules within they're called business rules within your enterprise that says if this shipment arrives, please inform persons A, B, and C.
Right.
So that's called rule management, and so we have a rule management engine as well.
Okay.
So there's different things that we do.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about the relationship between WinMAC, the Wireless Internet for Mobile Enterprise Consortium, and this forum. Is the forum essentially a program that WinMAC is running?
That is correct. The forum is essentially a program that WinMAC is running in collaboration with the member companies and other companies as well.
Okay. Talk at a higher level of generality about the interaction, again, between academia and business and how WinMAC is set up and what its structure is and what it delivers to academia, what it delivers to business.
So WinMAC was set up to be a university-industry partnership, as is mentioned on our website.
Right.
And, industry brings in the problems that they face.
Right.
They bring in some of the ideas that they may have in terms of how technology can be used in various businesses. They would bring in funding, of course.
Right.
And in the university, we would hire, with the funding, we would essentially hire students,
right,
and postdocs and scientists and professors to work on problems of potential interest to industry. Many times we'll work on problems that are, 2 to 3 years down. Sometimes we'll work on problems that are even of a longer duration, because we may feel that that particular short-term solution will not work.
Right.
The important thing which I want to really emphasize is, it may sound cliche, but it is a teamwork. We get together with the company folks very frequently, and we discuss, what the problems are and what are the, business issues and technology issues, and we have a very sort of free-flowing discussion, and we involve the industry very closely with our activities.
Is there any problem, or is there a structure that allows for the wider dissemination of the findings, or do the findings, the discoveries, the developments belong to the companies that have paid for them?
No. We do not. For example, what we do is, if there's a research publication, then publication is published and put on the website.
Right.
And if a patent gets filed, then of course patent intellectual property belongs to the university.
Right.
And that goes to the university's patent office.
Is that a big and growing source of funding for the university, would you say? Are there a lot of good patents that come out of this collaboration, and do they belong essentially to University of California in most cases?
Yes. In most cases. At least, I don't want to speak for University of California. In fact, I cannot even speak for the UCLA IP office.
Right.
I would let them talk for themselves.
Okay.
All I know is, as a professor, when intellectual property comes out, then if there is something patentable, then the patenting process goes through UCLA.
Okay. All right. Let's just briefly go over some of the specific areas that the RFID Executive Forum is going to cover. One of them that you've listed here are selected industry verticals, particular applications within the commercial sector.
Yes.
Say something about supply chain management, which is obviously one of the most important aspects of RFID now.
Yes, and so supply chain management, essentially involves the managing the flow of the products as they move from a supplier to the customer, and then from that customer to their customer, and so on and so forth.
All right, and even through to recycling.
Yeah, and all the way. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, on the other side, it goes from the final manufacturer, for example, a Ford, to a distributor. A dealer,
right.
And from there to the customer,
right.
And then there's also the repair angle, which is the maintenance angle, and then there's the recycling angle.
Right. So if particular products have dangerous chemicals in them that need to be treated in a certain way when the product's life cycle is almost over, then that can be monitored as well.
In fact, that's a very good thing you mentioned. The course, RFID systems course that I teach, one of the students, in fact, was looking at that particular application for his project.
Okay. Also, Homeland Security, security in general, and Homeland Security in particular. How important is RFID in that now?
I believe that Homeland Security Department, based on whatever news that I have read, is essentially interested in using RFID. RFID-based cards and so on and so forth to give to people, so that there's a tracking element. I think that within in terms of RFID for Homeland Security, that entire area is very new, and so I think that it'll go through some iterations and so on. So
okay,
forth.
Now two areas, aspects of that I'd like you to comment on. I discovered yesterday that that Homeland Security, through its National Visualization and Analytics Center, has granted a big grant to Stanford University to produce to create the first regional visualization and analytics center. What's the relationship between that field, visualization and analytics, and RFID, and how do they work together, and how important do you think the RFID will be for what Stanford's going to be doing to set up this new visualization and analytics center?
So I mean, it depends eventually, you know, what technology is used there, but I mean, RFID could be a technology to, you know, to track, you know, people, objects, and so on.
Right.
And visualization is sort of a, I mean, it's sort of an independent activity where you just put a visualization tool and...
Right, but it's closely related to RFID in that a lot of the information that is used in the visualization process can come from RFID systems.
Yes.
Okay. On the subject of Homeland Security, I'd like you to address this point. There's many technologies are sort of double-edged swords, and there's a possibility where they can do a lot of starting with fire, of practically the first human technology. It can cook food, it can keep people warm, it can burn down houses. RFID has a lot of potential. You're going to be exploring that. Some people are worried that if every person, object, and thing is tagged and tracked, that there's going to be some social problems that's going to create. What's your take on the trade-off and the way in which the maximal benefit and the minimal harm can be created through the use of RFID?
I think, you know, that's a very good point. You know, I think because you know, privacy concerns are there.
Right.
And, it's sort of like if you look at, you know, on the internet, you know, when you browse the internet, you know, your ISP knows every click you ever made.
Right.
And if they want to essentially store, who knows, they might even be storing every click you ever made.
Right.
Because it doesn't cost them much at all. I mean, you know, because so in a sense, you know, on the internet also, you know, the privacy issues are there. But I'm, you know, it's a matter of, I think, you know, combination of, you know, laws and educating people and so on and so forth. Since I'm a technical guy, my approach is that if I'm asked, you know, is there a technical solution whereby no information about me is available on the tag?
Right.
I will say yes. I will have a tag that has a number only.
Right.
That's it. And it's like, yeah, you can have some number on your tag that there is no information about your name or anything, so that when somebody reads it, they don't know who you are. They just know a number.
So essentially, it's the same kind of anonymity that you'd have on the internet, you'd have within the RFID space. No personal identifiable information is included.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, if my take is, I mean, if someone asks me in my application, I don't want any of my personal information.
Right.
Then the technical solution that I recommend to them is just have a tag with only a number.
Right.
And then have a reader that reads the number, and the rest of the information about the product or the individual or whatever, you just keep stored in your database somewhere that is behind some firewall so people can't get to it. Just like, you know, a bank keeps a social security number, et cetera, et cetera.
So, in fact, information about people ought to be under the control of the people themselves, whereas information about a product, products don't really have the same rights that people do. It ought to be available, but information about people should be better protected.
Well, you know, again, in terms of, you have to look at the specific application and who's, you know, for example, suppose you check into a hotel,
right,
or some resort, and they say, well, here's a tag, here's an RFID tag,
right,
and your name is on the tag,
right,
but every time you eat at a restaurant, you get 20% off.
Right.
You can take it if you want to or not if you don't want to.
Right.
So it's sort of like that. I think you know, there's going to be an opt-in anytime. You know, it's sort of, do you want to have the benefits that come with technology, and then you give up some rights, or you don't? Then you know, you don't have the benefit of technology. So yeah, you're right. But having said that, if someone says, well, no, look, my customers, I'm Hilton, my customers don't want their name on the tags.
Right.
Then yeah, this is the solution for you.
Now, essentially, at a big theme park, for example, everyone can be tagged, and a real prime example is to keep kids from getting lost, and it'll allow people to take rides according to what they've paid for.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting. Yeah, you know, kids getting lost. That application has been around for a while.
Right.
And in different theme parks and so on. The other way to have people, you know, being allowed in different rides and so on. Yeah, I think that would be a next natural extension of the RFID.
Okay. Now, in some other Utopia Media sites, we've been talking about MIMO lately, multiple input, multiple output, really powerful wireless systems. Is that already being taken advantage of in some RFID systems?
I think that MIMO be used much more in RFID than it's being used now.
Right.
And I'll tell you why specifically. If you look at one technical issue is the range of reading by a reader.
Exactly.
That has been still an issue. And if you could use MIMO technology with directional antennas, for example, you should be able to get, you know, longer range and so on.
Exactly.
So I think, and people are working on that.
People are working on that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We all know about systems that are implanted in cars to be able to retrieve them if they're stolen or lost or whatever. I've also been covering the bus line here in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley, the orange line that's going to come online around Labor Day, the buses have the ability to talk to the network and extend green lights for themselves and so on. How far into the vehicular system do you think RFID could go in terms of monitoring or even partially controlling the operations of millions of vehicles in on freeways and on streets?
So there's a financial question there, and the reason I say this is in that same course I taught, we had 20 students. Each student worked on a project.
Right.
And one of the students actually worked on an RFID-based theft detection system for cars in L.A.
And right.
He drew up a map of West L.A. and he said, you know, these are where the expensive cars are, and he was able to pinpoint which streets he can put the readers in, so on. GPS as a technology, right? I mean, if you think about GPS with cellular, if you combine the two,
right.
You can track the car every instant in time.
Right.
But it's expensive. So
right.
Now you look at, RFID, it's much, much cheaper. Because you're not paying a monthly subscription, da da da. You know, once you install readers in a certain location, it's fixed upfront cost, and there's really not much recurring cost. And there, in that particular situation, if you look at the width of the roads today, if you don't, you know, with just generic antennas, if you use passive tags, it's not going to work.
Right.
So if you have active tags, yeah, it's going to work. If you look at tolls, you know, the automatic toll.
Right.
I mean, they've been using RFID, both passive and active, but then it's a very controlled sort of a situation where, you know, you have only these three lanes and you have to kind of go at the speed kind of thing.
Right. This is the system where people have RFID tags on their cars and then they pay or they're monitored to post-fact to go over bridges or on turnpikes or whatever where they have to pay. And that's already in place in a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah. So the those automatic toll roads.
Right.
Where you have this prepaid. I mean, that's mostly based on RFID. So that's already there.
Right.
If you want to think about, you know, theft reduction, you know, first of all, RFID is not GPS, as you know we've discussed before.
Right.
So you cannot really track things globally. You can only know whether it passed to this particular point or not.
Right, but the point is if you start putting in multiple points,
yes.
Readers all over, ubiquitous readers,
yes.
then you essentially have a kind of makeshift GPS anyway.
Well, you know, if you start putting readers everywhere, in every street corner, I think it'll become unaffordable.
You think that's not a viable proposition?
Not right now. Now, I mean, if you want to put in every street intersection in L.A.,
right.
I don't see that as financially viable at all.
Okay.
And, you know, if you put on certain strategic areas,
right.
You say, well, you know, in my neighborhood, I have only 8 entry and exit points, and, you know, that way you just put it on those 8 entry exit points or some such thing.
Right.
Then you may have an economic.
Okay, value. Because the point where the theory or the possibility meets the practice. There was a segment on the national news yesterday talking about the worries of highway planners that with hybrid vehicles getting better mileage, there won't be enough gas tax to fix the roads. And the solution to that is essentially to put GPS in every car and monitor the mileage that every car goes through.
Yes.
And bill people according to that. This is really close to what we've just been talking about, that may or may not be economically viable, to essentially put in more sensors and track everything.
Well, if you... Well, no, so that's a different thing. If you just put a GPS in every car...
Right.
But the data was... And you just kept track of how many miles this car drove...
Right.
You know, or actually where it, you know, where it drove through or whatever it is, because maybe only certain roads are... And that data is just stored in the car.
Right.
That's still not going to be that expensive.
Okay.
But if you're talking about broadcasting the data out from a cellular network, that connection is going to cost you the money.
Okay. What's the significance of the RFID executive forum and the evolution of RFID? Is this going to be a sort of an epical event, a seminal event in the history of RFID research and deployment?
I don't. No, my intention was just to get some really, really smart people, practitioners, get people from different industry, from, you know, pharmaceutical, from aerospace, people who've been trying the Walmart mandate and the DoD mandate to talk about those applications, people who understand, who have been doing some implementation, who have started to develop some implementation strategies, you know, how to go about putting RFID. Some people who tried the slap and ship approach and, you know, may be happy or may not be happy.
What's slap and ship?
Slap and ship is a response to Walmart's mandate of, with Walmart, the mandate was to put RFID tags on the carton, and basically what, and you know, send it, send when you ship it to Walmart, you know,
right.
put the tags on the carton and then ship it. And initially, folks were thinking about, you know, coming up with sort of a business case and seeing, you know, how they can use RFID themselves within their own organization,
right,
for other benefits.
As long as they're doing it for Walmart.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I guess a lot of the suppliers said, you know, let's just forget about it. Walmart has asked for it. We'll just slap it and ship it, and
right,
we don't care.
Okay. Let's say it's 2010.
Mm-hmm.
What's your best hope for the presence of RFID in society and business? What will it be doing then in 5 years?
So I think the supply chain is definitely a going to be a leading edge application, because there are going to be real benefits there. The other area is just going to be security, theft reduction, where, you know, there's expensive assets where you want to track the assets, you know when they went in and out.
Right.
A third thing is just going to be locating stuff. You know, you've got a large enterprise, you're a General Motors Corporation, and you want to locate things in a warehouse. Locate things in an area where they store the, you know, in their storerooms. But then the fourth is the warehousing application, where, you know, you've got a warehouse and you're storing things and you want to find things. So I think that those applications will be well along their way, and folks will have some ROI. And there'll be some other interesting applications. Another area that we're working on, which I'm pretty excited about, is connecting RFID to sensors, like we spoke about earlier.
Right.
Temperature sensor is an example. We have a project in our lab for motion sensors. So I think that is another area that will start to emerge. And that'll follow in the tails of this. You know.
Okay, on the academic side, is RFID sort of is it becoming its own discipline? Are there RFID study programs developing? Is it going to be continue to be part of engineering and computer science and so on, or will it sort of pull itself out and become its own discipline?
It's hard to say. You know, like anything else, right? I mean, it depends on how big of an impact it's going to have on society.
Right.
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, my take is I'm just doing the work now.
Okay.
And having a lot of fun doing it.
Okay. on a slightly more esoteric note, what about the possibility of what I guess could be called internal RFID for the use of very small sensors at the physiological level for medical research or treatment? Is that something that you get involved with sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. That is a, I think, so let us look at that, right? I mean, so let's say there's a sensor and then, you know, you make a wireless network out of it and so on.
Right.
So that is the core technology. And now if you think about, let's look in the field of medicine, you talked of internal sensors. There are already certain types of sensors that have, you know, that allow, for example, people that are admitted in hospitals that are walking around in the hospital,
right,
to be monitored wirelessly, right? And then there's a separate frequency that has been set up for medical enterprises that others are not supposed to use. So,
so it can be used both for tracking syringes and for tracking patients.
That is correct.
And what I'm talking about, though, is to use it internally to monitor blood cells.
Yeah. So no. But in fact, I was talking about that application. I was talking about monitoring a patient and then sending the data wirelessly through a wireless network
right.
to a central location.
Oh, okay. So, and in fact, how deep down into the physiological infrastructure is it possible to push RFID?
I think there will be no limit.
No limit. So, in fact, it can go completely internally and globally.
Yes.
And when those are integrated, we'll have a pretty fancy system for seeing what's going on, won't we?
Yes.
All right. I want to thank you for your academic work, your commercial work, and your integration work, and give a final plug here for people who want to find out more about the RFID Executive Forum and how they can... can anybody who wants to attend, or do you have to be some particular... highly placed person in a company?
Anybody can attend. It's open. Just go to the website, register. The website is winmec.ucla.edu/RFIDexec. And the email address, if you need information, is rfid@winmec.ucla.edu. And Winmec is WINMEC.
Okay, I left out one thing. You're also a member of the Wi-Fi and Beyond Los Angeles Executive Broadband Panel. What's happening over there, and how important is RFID in the deliberations and the final vision statement of that group?
So right now, on that particular panel, we are not looking at RFID. Right now, we are looking at a Wi-Fi infrastructure that could be beneficial to the city of the people, the city of Los Angeles, and the people of the city of Los Angeles. And so that is sort of the first. You know, we're looking at, you know, basically looking at, you know, what we are sort of coming up with the vision statement for that particular target. You know, just like what, you know, for example, Philadelphia has put in Wi-Fi and so on. So
right.
A lot of other cities are putting in Wi-Fi. The RFID certainly could play a role in the future by, for example, being able to, I mean, if an entire city has Wi-Fi, now, all of a sudden, you've got the infrastructure to communicate information. So for example, if you think about, there are Wi-Fi RFID tags
right.
that exist today in the market. We have some in our lab. So if, for example, if a company all of a sudden says, oh, there's a trucking company that says, I want to just, you know, cheaply track my trucks.
Right.
And so if I can put a $30 active Wi-Fi RFID tag, well, by the time Wi-Fi infrastructure comes into city of LA, assuming if it comes, then by the time the price of the RFID tags would also be lowered.
Right.
So now, using public infrastructure, you might be able to track lots of stuff that otherwise you were not able to.
Well, because in particular, the other major initiative that Mayor Han has taken in Los Angeles, in addition to the broadband wireless panel, has been a proposal that hundreds of thousands of sites within the city on lampposts, traffic lights, and city-owned buildings would be available for leasing for wireless devices. How could that possibly accelerate RFID deployment within the city as a place for tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of more essentially readers or sensors?
Yeah, I mean, so in principle, yeah, but there's always a cost issue, right?
Right.
I mean, so, you know, RFID readers are still far, far more expensive than a Wi-Fi access point.
Okay.
So, strictly from an economic standpoint, if you put a Wi-Fi access point, you know, cities are able to find some way to justify however they do the, you know, industry-government partnership, but looks like some of the cities have been able to do it.
Right.
With RFID, financially, right now, to blanket a city, I think, is just too expensive.
It's too expensive.
Right now.
But in fact, you could, by putting a general a Wi-Fi access system ubiquitously throughout the city,
yes.
That would then enable, if you had powerful enough tags,
yes.
Then the RFID would ride along on the wireless deployment.
Yeah. See, the issue is, the bottom line is that the range of a passive system is very low.
Right.
Right. And because there are FCC limits to how much power a reader can put out.
Right.
Now, and that is, that problem gets resolved when you're talking of an active system, because now both sides are powered.
Right.
And you know, with a Wi-Fi access point, the technology has reached a significantly, a significant level of maturity, you know, because the market's now pretty big and so on, and a lot of companies have put a lot of R&D money in.
Right.
So you have good ranges on the Wi-Fi signals because, you know, and also because the fact that both sides are active.
And you can use MIMO, and in fact, you can't tag every last object, but things that are high value, meaning people or $40,000 cars or other or some important things, those are capable of carrying active RFID tags. Is that right?
Yeah.
And those can then talk to the ubiquitous Wi-Fi network.
Yes.
So we'll always know, people won't have to worry where their children are at the 1 in the morning. They'll be able to find out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it'll be interesting, you know, to see how the Wi-Fi, how a citywide Wi-Fi network can be exploited by individuals, by businesses, for all sorts of other applications like, you know, public safety and so on. I think it'll be interesting.
And you pretty much think this is the direction we're going. This is going to happen one way or the other.
Well, I'm a technical guy.
Right.
I've stopped predicting the future.
Okay, good. All right, but you can safely predict that on March 9th there's going to be this forum at UCLA.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for talking to us on Broadband Wireless Access World today.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, bye.